I tried to break in, but my mute wouldn't unmute for some reason.
Okay. I was going to say, I didn't see it in my left hand, so I didn't think it was recording, but I'm like, I'm not the Zoom guru, so, you know, maybe it
is. I think we are. Okay. We are recording. Now we're waiting for the live stream to kick in here.
Okay.
It is setting up just about there. And we're live.
Okay. Again, good morning all, and welcome to the Leon County Resource and Development Authority Executive Committee meeting. Time being 8:02, and it looks like we have a robust agenda. Relative to guests, do not see any guests that have joined us. Peggy, have any made you aware that they will be in attendance?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. We will move into the next item, number 3, modifications to the agenda. Are there any modifications?
I don't have any.
Okay. Next item, public comment. No public. Facebook friends, we welcome you as well. Number 5, approval of draft meeting minutes, and that's for November 26th. And you, I trust that you had an opportunity to read those. And if you had, I'd like to entertain a motion. Okay. It's been properly motioned by Dave and seconded by April. All those in favor, please acknowledge with the sign aye, the approval of draft minutes for November 26th.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. No opposition. Motion carries. The next item that we have is our investment committee charter amendment. And Ron, are you walking us through that item?
Sure. And just so that everyone can stay on the screen and we can see y'all, I'm going to refrain from putting everything up on the screen. Just makes it a little bit easier. So if you've got your hard copies or your own computer copies, you can follow along from those. On this first item, this was something that was put forth by the Investment Advisory Committee. Just a minor change to the charter, which gives them a little flexibility on the some of the actions that they have to take and just to do them as necessary or if needed.
I would propose a little bit of amendments to it, but if you're ready for that discussion, I will presume.
Okay. We will accept the motion on, and then we'll open the floor for the questions. So is there a motion for approval?
Well, I'd like to make amendments to it for your approval.
Okay. Okay. I thought you were, okay. Go ahead.
Under purpose item number 2.
Yes.
I would think that the objectives would also include portfolio content review, or so it might read objectives, strategies, policies, and portfolio content.
Which?
Item number 2.
Under purpose.
Under purpose.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. I must be on the wrong.
We want them to look over the portfolio and have a comfort level with it, or comment if they don't. So one of the purposes of that group is to review the portfolio.
Okay. So under item number 2, add
portfolio content.
Portfolio review.
Or review. Yeah, one or the other. And
may I ask a question? Are we trying to review the portfolio or review the results of the performance? Because do we pick individual investments?
Well, when this was originally written, and it was written by me a long time ago, we envisioned that we would have individual equity issues or whatever, but it turned out we've only ended up with 2 different funds. And sometimes we in that committee will suggest that one fund is to be lowered and another fund increased. So they actually do look at the content and evaluate it and make recommendations for it.
And under the responsibility section, under item number 3, it says review the performance of the investment portfolios, the investment consultants and fund managers, and take appropriate actions as necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one of their responsibilities. And that technically falls under, in terms of purpose, it's under oversee the authorities, investment consultants, and or fund managers. In this case, because we have not procured a separate fund manager, I serve in that role. So the investment committee does review the objectives. They oversee me and basically the results of how I'm investing, which basically isn't, you know, we don't change anything. We really have not changed. The most we do is we change our allocation between investments.
So Dave, your thoughts on it, since it's recognized under responsibilities, you'd also like to have it included under purpose?
Under purpose, include under item 2, portfolio review or content review. Yeah, portfolio review is better.
Okay.
A second one under the category withdrawals. Item number 2, withdrawals from the investment account that are to be transferred instead of and to be transferred, that are to be transferred.
I'm sorry, I'm still trying to
catch up with me.
Yeah, where are you at? Are you still on the charter, or did you move on to?
No, I'm on the
he's page 9 of 28.
Charter, yeah. Item number 2 under withdrawals. No, wait
okay.
A minute.
That's the wrong agenda. Yeah, you're on another. Yeah, so let's take care of this action item. So the action item that we have here is the charter amendment. Were there any other questions or comments before we move to a vote for the investment committee charter amendment outside of those that have already been shared by Dave and those that were already captured under responsibilities? Okay, there are none. Is there a motion?
Move.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, thank you. So it's been properly motioned by David, seconded by Eric. All those in favor of adopting the Investment Advisory Committee charter with modifications, acknowledge with aye.
Aye.
Opposition? Motion carries. Now we'll transition to Investment Procedure and Control Manual. And Dave, I'll let you pick up where you left off, sir.
Yeah, I think we've got an extra word in there under the designated controller. At the very last line, it says not also serve. I just say not serve as the controller.
Which item is that?
This is the Investment Procedure and Internal Control Manual, Ron, and it's on page 8 of 28, and it's under designated controller. It's the last sentence.
I think the word also is not necessary there.
Okay.
And then under withdrawals, paragraph 2, I would propose minor change to that, saying withdrawals from the investment account that are to be transferred, not and to be transferred, but that are to be transferred.
Sorry, I'm trying to catch up with you, Dave. Hang on.
Okay. You got it. Page 9 of 28, number 2, under withdrawals. Got it, Ron?
Yes.
Okay.
Gotcha. Take out the end.
And substitute that are.
Correct.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, those are my suggestions for revision.
Okay, and we certainly appreciate your wisdom in that regard. Board members, governors, any other modifications that we would like, propose, or entertain?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay, well, is there a motion?
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
Changes as presented. Yeah.
Okay. So again, we have before us the Investment Procedure Internal Control Manual with the modifications. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor, please acknowledge with a side
aye.
Aye. Opposition? Okay. Motion carries. Thank you, Dave, for leading the charge on that. We appreciate it. Ron, we'll jump back on the agenda with item number 8, accounts receivables allowance for bad write-off.
So this is a cleanup from the audit. This is not something that that caused any problems. It doesn't really change the financial statements any. It's just a footnote disclosure at this point. But there is an allowance for bad debts that we have assumed were going to be bad debts in the past. So this allowance account includes the Bing Energy balance and the BUC Technologies balance. And what I'm asking is to the ability to just go ahead and write that the balance of the receivable off against the allowance account and it basically goes away from the financial statements. It doesn't preclude us from trying to take any further action against BUC. Bing is, you know, they're done. That debt was discharged in bankruptcy, but the BUC still hangs out there. But this just gets it off the books.
That's over a year old. I concur with that.
Yeah, it's at least.
Okay, again, so we have the account receivables item before us. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, we'll let April get into the fun on the second. So, okay, so we have a motion and a second for approval of the staff recommendation related to account receivables and for bad debt write-off. All those in favor, please acknowledge to sign aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposition? Motion carries. Item number 9, Danfoss TurboCore amended and restated rights of first refusal. Ron, you can walk us through that.
Yeah, so this was something that Kim and I had discussed, and given the COVID situation, we thought it was appropriate to give Danfoss additional time to consider their options related to the use of the northern 6 acres of our 12-acre out parcel. They received this right of first refusal back in September of 2017. It expires September of 2020. They have a right to extend for 2 additional one-year periods at a cost of $10,000 per year. So this would give them, at no additional cost, until January 31st to continue to consider their options. And they have already signed the agreement and are willing to move forward with it as is.
Ron, thank you for adding that piece, because I was going to throw that in, that they are supportive of this as well. And I think in the current environment, it would make sense that we would support it as well. Are there questions or conversations prior to a vote? Okay.
Let me ask a quick question. Yeah. Ron, are you sensing at all that they might be trying to, in 6 months, renegotiate the $10,000 piece?
They did not give any indication of that. I think the expectation is that by January, they'll have some decision on what they want to do with the parcel.
Okay. Again, no further questions. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. So properly motion and second, the approval of the restated right of first refusal. All those in favor, acknowledge with aye.
Aye.
Opposition?
Aye.
Motion carries. General counsel agreement extension.
We have discussed the current agreement with Melissa again, and she is happy to extend it for another year at the existing terms, conditions, and rates. I will note that she is getting pressure to increase her rates, and she has not done so since the beginning of this agreement. She is going to look at, see how she can use junior staff to help with some of the things and try to keep that burden down. But that is something that we will probably have to look at in the next term. And I've been very clear with her that if the rates go up, then we will certainly have to consider whether we want to put it out to bid. I will say that her rate, the partner level rate, is $250 an hour, which is pretty darn cheap. For her level of experience, and but she's agreed to continue at that rate for another year.
I'll just comment that she is the best, most efficient counsel we've had in the 10 years I've served.
Dave, I think we would all kind of concur with that. She is indeed an asset for the park and our board. So yeah, well, and we appreciate the fact that she has interest in continuing it. So with that, is there a motion?
So moved.
Thank you, Dave. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, thank you, Eric. So properly motion and second, the extension of the general counsel agreement. All those in favor, aye.
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 Opposition? Okay, motion carries on that. And then, Ron, we have the land planning scope of work. You may or may not want to pull that one up, but let's take a stab at talking through it.
So I'll go ahead and share the screen on this one.
Yeah.
Let me go ahead and. Okay. So here's the, make sure I got something going here. Got too much screen management to go. So if you recall during the last board meeting, Rick Moore made a presentation regarding the steps involved in getting ready to try to lease out some of the ground for development. This scope of work is something that the board had asked for to move forward. And so what I did is since Rick Moore did such a great job of laying out the process, I pretty much used that as the outline of what the scope of work would look like. So these are all the steps involved and the details behind what we're trying to accomplish. So I've laid all of those out here. This would serve as the basis for an RFP if we chose to go that route. There's some additional work we could do to provide information about the available documents. And then the budget is based on the information that Rick also provided, which was the $2,000 per acre. These are all of the basic steps required to put together that package, he called due diligence package, so that a prospective land developer would have all the information they would need to quickly make a decision about the property and to move forward when they were ready. Now, I added down here some questions that are still outstanding as it would relate to moving forward with this. And, you know, the biggest question we have right now is the, what land we would include in this, because the incubator is still a very definite possibility. And I'll talk a little bit later about the EDA grant. The other part is the out parcel and lot 4E. And there's and that project juggernaut is still a possibility. So until those two items are determined, a substantial amount of the undeveloped land is still in question, and I'm not sure it would make sense to move forward with this until we have answers to what's going to happen with those parcels. That would just leave us with the 10 acres, and that would significantly reduce the scope of work that anyone might be working on. So, and then the other question is going to be, would we want to go ahead and move forward with working with FAMU and FSU and seeing and finding out their interest in including some of their undeveloped ground in either the study and participating, or moving forward with trying to develop our agreements among us to make it easier for any developer to get access to that ground. So still a number of outstanding questions on that. And then finally, the process requirements. And we've brought this up before. We don't necessarily have to bid this out. At some point, if we figure out the scope of the ground we want to include, we can move forward under a continuing contract. And Leon County government has 15 continuing service agreements with civil engineers. So that basically establishes the hourly rates by job title. And we could piggyback on those contracts and not have to go out to RFP. So that's basically the background. So what I'm looking for is direction from the executive committee on if there's a desire to move forward with this or to wait until we determine what's going to happen with the incubator and Project Juggernaut. And then at that point, do we want to just go ahead and move forward with a continuing service or continuing contract under Leon County?
Well, thank you for the presentation. I will share with you all my thoughts. It's great. We now know that we have a vehicle that we could use by way of the county if we were to move forward. But I believe that with the two outstanding, maybe three outstanding instances out there, whether it be Project Juggernaut or the relationship with FAMU, FSU, and EDA, that those are things that we need to know more about and what the outcome is going to be. It sounds like that the action step that we could engage right now would be the conversations with FAMU and FSU to determine where they are relative to planned land use. That would help us. The other two items then we would leave open, i.e. Project Juggernaut and EDA, until we got those final outcomes, since they're certainly not within our hands of knowledge or control about what's going to happen with that. Are there other thoughts that April, Dave, Eric, you all have regarding this item in terms of direction?
I think a pause right now, with the exception of, as you discussed, talking with FAMU and FSU, I think a pause on the rest of it is probably appropriate.
Okay.
I agree. Completely agree.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. I do think that at the point that we're ready to do that, including FAMU and FSU, makes a lot of sense. I think that's our greatest area of opportunity.
Certainly would agree with that. One of the things that I shared with Ron during our one-on-one that I wanted to point to having that done, that conversation or initiating, making sure we have greater guidance within the next quarter, that he would be able to report back on an ongoing basis about the status of that conversation to this body. Okay. So it appears, Ron, are you good with that, that the direction being that you would engage in the conversations with FAMU and FSU and continue reporting until we get close out for the other items?
Yes.
Okay.
That's clear. Thank you.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Then moving it to item 12, which is the office reopening plan and timing consideration. This is just discussion. It's not an action item. But Ron, would you like to walk us through that?
Yes. So what I just tried to outline for you in the attached document was just some of the objectives and considerations for reopening the office. I know you all, I mean, it's our lives today on what's going on with COVID, and certainly we have not escaped it. As you know, we're all working remotely, and we have been since about the third week of March. What this document pretty much says is that we do not have the same sense of urgency to return to the office that maybe some other operations do that have more face-to-face operations with their clients. We are learning how to work more effectively as a team. We've implemented some technology, I think, that's really, really going to help us. We've started using Microsoft Teams even more than what we did initially. So we use it for video conferencing and chatting, and we have since added Microsoft Planner, which is a planning tool for task management, and collaboration. So we can see all the different tasks that we're working on and the status of each, and we can post comments. We have a web page actually that shows us every time somebody posts something to one of these projects. We know what they're posting. So we're all on the same page. Honestly, I think we're probably communicating better now than even when we did in the office. So it just gives us a way to organize all of these different things that are going on. I know Naomi has faced a big challenge because she was pretty brand new when all of this started. And now, I don't know about her, but I feel pretty good about our communication and our ability to keep her on track and getting the most we can out of what she can contribute. So my recommendation at this point is that we continue on the path that we're on, especially given the recent spikes in cases, that we go ahead and develop the policies for when we return. Because when we return, we're still going to be faced with some uncertainty. I think it's going to come down to, you know, is there an effective vaccine and a treatment? And I think everyone is still going to be trying to make sure that, you know, we do all the social distancing and the cleaning and all the other things that the CDC and the OSHA require. So I've drafted some policies. I think it's just still pretty rough. It needs to go around to staff to look at and make sure they get to weigh in and include any thoughts that we need to get in there. And but at this point, my recommendation is that we continue on this path, we develop the policies for when we're ready to return, and that we reevaluate this in 2 months.
So I will tell you all my one-on-one meeting conversation with Ron. There are a couple of things that I want to look at, and it's the same that other businesses are having to look at as well. We all moved out in March, you know, going back, doing the whole remote thing, and that was out of a sense of just extreme emergency. None of us had planned for it. None of us knew what this was going to look like, whether it was going to be a month or whether it was going to be 10 months. With that in mind, I told Ron, I really wanted him to step back and with the whole operation to determine, now let's look at effectiveness. And, you know, how do we measure what we're doing while we're in that space, not just at the sense of emergency, but at the sense of moving the organization and our priorities forward. So one of the things that I've tasked Ron with and asked him to do is that we will look at plans. We could look at, you know, quarterly plans, but broken out into 30 days and how we operationalize those and how we measure the effectiveness of the operation. Because I've seen with some companies, remote has worked extremely well, and some instances it hasn't. And we need to be able to determine that that's the case. Of course, we're going to put safety and health as an absolute top priority, but also looking at whether we're advancing the mission related to the park also being one of our top priorities as well. So I would welcome your comments and your thoughts on that, and know that as the chair, I am keeping a watchful eye, and Ron and I are engaging on ongoing conversation about the work of the team and how we're advancing the good work of the park. So anybody with comments relative to that, and that this would stay on our agenda, but again, he and I would be speaking on it on an ongoing basis. It would come back to the board in about a couple of months.
Well, I think everyone has had an opportunity to practice working away from the office. And I know in our case, it seems to be working quite well. And I would agree with Ron that it can be even better than actually in the office and office times. So long as Ron is comfortable with the situation, I wouldn't impose any kind of requirements to change that. Common sense is pretty uncommon these days, and I would hope that he would continue to use it.
Absolutely. Great comments, Eric. April or Dave, any thoughts there?
No, yeah. I concur. Excuse me, April, go ahead.
No, I think this is a good start on a reopening plan. There are a lot of resources that are out there to help beef up particular areas, but I definitely don't think we should be in any hurry to get the staff back in the office, given the situation that we face. I don't see this happening anytime soon, and I think the health and well-being and mental health of the employees, having peace of mind, is the most important thing we can do right now. And, you know, as somebody who has staff, I never imagined we could work so effectively remotely. Not in a million years did I think this could work. And, you know, we're going gangbusters in my company. And as long as everyone stays in touch, and using tools like you're using, Ron, Teams and other some of the tools associated with Microsoft, I think you're in great shape. And I appreciate the staff for working through this very strange time that we're in.
You're right about that. Very strange. Dave, and then Ron, I'll grab you. So Dave, comment?
Well, this is going to make a major change in office occupancies, and real estate values, I think, are going to plummet in big office buildings across the country. But what Ron recommends, I'm fully in accord with.
Okay, absolutely. And then Ron, your comment.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on something April talked about. Yes, there's a lot more we can add, and most of that would be covered in the policies. And one thing I did is I joined the Society for Human Resource Managers so I could get access to some of their resources, mm-hmm. particularly around drafting these policies and make sure we cover all the bases. They've done a nice job. I wish they had a better sample policy I could, plug and play with, but they do have all of the issues addressed and different options and things to consider. So I'm trying to take advantage of all the resources I can get.
And Ron, I will tell you too, we actually ended up using the county as a resource too. They have a great reopen plan and strategy, and I think her name is Miss Hunter, that's leading the effort for events and the team. But yeah, so lots of good resources out
yes.
there. We'll keep everybody posted. The next item is the executive director annual performance review process. So before Ron goes into that, I will share with the group, I always thought that we had a set calendar, if you will, for when these things would happen and that it didn't just happen arbitrarily. But Ron reminded me, he's like, no, he's been our little reminder in the system. So I've asked him to memorialize and kind of write out what that process is that we would follow going forward. So Ron, if you'll walk us through that.
Yeah, so the thing that we do have in writing is my contract, and the big thing that it says is that we'll have this review done by the end of the year, by September 30th. So that's sort of the benchmark, but it didn't really get into that, you know, how do you get it done? So this is pretty much the process that we followed last year, that we would, and we modified it last year as a result of the compensation committee. And that is that we would do the survey as we've done in the past. And I have an electronic version of that using the Microsoft platform. And we modified it by board action to include the five high-level strategic goals to be evaluated on. So that will be included this year as well. So the timing, though, is that let me see. Let me go back here. Here we go. That second paragraph. It says, distribute the annual review survey on August 24th, which gives 2 weeks to complete by September 7th. And then we would include an agenda item back to the executive committee for the meeting scheduled September 15th. And then we would include in the agenda packet that would go to the executive committee, the survey responses and the salary history. And then based on any recommendation from the executive committee, that would go to the board on the first meeting in October.
So in essence, this would establish our schedule again. Nothing different. The process would remain the same from prior year. But because we're asking that it be memorialized, I would entertain a motion from this body.
So moved.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, so it's been properly motioned and second the approval of the performance review process. All those in favor, please acknowledge and sign aye.
Aye.
Opposition? Okay, motion carries. Now we'll move into, and Ron, you'll have to share with me because I don't have those names, but the officer slate for 2020-21. So we'll see, you know, who the lucky folks are that have at least expressed interest and see where we are. So Ron?
Well, I think you know the first one on the list. So Kim has graciously volunteered to serve as board chair again, to be nominated anyway. And Kevin Graham has offered to serve as vice chair and potentially the next incoming chair. And then Sanjoy Goswami has volunteered to serve as treasurer. So that is the slate that we have at this point. Any thoughts, comments, whatever Kim wants to do with it at this point?
We'll want it at the slate, but certainly we welcome, and certainly if there are additions or anything else, but we want to advance the slate to the full board of governors.
I'll be glad to make a few comments. I have sort of advocated through recent years that the chair's position takes a while to get accustomed to what they're doing and handle on all the different moving parts. And I've advocated that the chair's position ought to be 2 years. We've decided not to accept that as a policy, but at least keep it as a consideration. So I am very supportive of our current chair. I'm glad she's willing to serve a second year. I think she's doing an excellent job. I'm sorry for her that our year has kind of been disrupted as it's been. But keep on going, lady. You're doing a great job.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate that.
100% agreement. 1,000% agreement.
Wish it were the lottery. I'd have the money falling down, yeah.
That's right. You'd be rich. You could retire.
Okay, so... sounds like we have a solid slate of officers that recognizes the newbies that's come to the organization, which is good because we want a pipeline. We've talked about that before and how we grow that. I don't have any other recommendations that I'd recommend for the slate of officers. So if that is the case, then we can either vote it out to get it to the board or just take it as it is since there's no opposition. It's just one of each. So If there aren't any concerns about it, then I'll just let it go as it is. Staff reports. Executive Director Ron, what do you have in the way of good news for us?
So only a few things to talk about. The first one I wanted to mention was the FSU TMH COVID lab is moving forward. The space has been renovated and they are moving in. Eric, I don't know if you know more about the operation and the status of that at this point, but the only other thing I wanted to mention before I turn it back over to you, Eric, is we are in the process of running a natural gas line to the building so that a backup generator can be installed. They were going to use a LP tank above ground. And so we started looking at this option. The city is in the process of running their line, but we've already run the service line to the building. So we'll be ready to go, I think, fairly quickly on that. Eric, did you have anything on that?
Yeah, just to let you know, in general, this is moving along quite well. I think it's basically set up. There's been an awful lot of work with TMH, and it's surprising how incredibly complicated it is to do simple tasks when there are federal regulations involved. So it's moving forward. We're trying to be the least of the hang-ups, FSU. I believe that there's a fellow, Jonathan Dennis. He is a professor in the biology department who's leading the charge with this. He's extremely expert in the methodology that will be used to do this. And it should be, at this point in time today, he should probably be running some validation samples to make sure that the system is working right. The hope is, and I don't know the current timeline on it, that we will be able to accept real incoming samples in August, early August, ideally. The idea, of course, is this would create significant capacity with rapid turnaround times of 8 to 24 hours that would help FSU and hopefully other community participants to get rapid results, essentially for opening campus and ensuring that this thing is spread the minimum amount possible. Yes, we have an office. It's actually the staff is going to be TMH people. It's going. I also just mentioned briefly that there's a request for an additional roughly 1,000 square feet of space that I see is available in the first floor Morgan. That's actually for a COVID-related matter for contact tracing for those folks that are might be positive. That and I don't know what the methodology they'll use or the nature or intrusiveness, as it were, of what they will do. That's being established in concert with Department of Health and others, and that will essentially create kind of a nucleus of effort in the Morgan building for this. Whether it's fortunate or unfortunate, we're really doing this year by year. So it's not really solving a long-term LCRDA need, but in the short run, it's doing something.
And we definitely appreciate that because it's it will help us. And at the same time, we're very glad to be able to help with, you know, with the testing and having space for that. I did want to add that we're still working on a lead for the second floor. That would also be involved in COVID-related testing. And we expect to hear on that any day now. And then we have another lead related that's waiting to find out what the first lead's doing before they can do it. So we have some options that are stacking up. So hopefully some of those start to materialize soon.
Ron or Eric, what's the anticipated launch date? I'm sorry if I've missed it.
Well, it's as soon as possible. We want to get this thing going as rapidly as we can. But of course, there are a lot of regulatory procedures that are involved. Those are being followed, you know, close to the letter. But the hope is this will be launched and samples will be coming in for actual testing, billable testing in August. Now that's a guess right now. I've been out of the loop for a little bit, but that was the intent. And it's actually quite the need in order to be able to be ahead of the game for FSU returning students.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Thank you for that.
So we also are basically moving forward with the EDA grant question and answers as they happen. We had another inquiry, I think it was, I've lost track of time, last week or the week before. And one of the things they asked for was an update to the letter from OEV with their commitment. So we turned that around in a day. So OEV has reconfirmed their commitment. Eric, they had some of the same concerns with their letter that they did with the FSU letter, and it follows exactly the same format as what FSU provided, basically removing any type of condition to making that award. So it's actually a good thing for us. So we're pretty happy about that. And then we also provided some other legal documents that are typically included in an award agreement. So that's looking pretty good. I want to thank Kim. She has set us up with a meeting to meet with some folks from TCC to talk about what happens when you get an EDA award and what all the steps you have to go through before you, you know, try to issue your own press release or, you know, make any of those missteps. So
goes to the regulations that Eric's talked about and all of that, following the letter to the T of what they expect. So it's been an interesting journey for us, to say the least.
So Naomi and Michael and I are going to meet with Kim's team, and we're going to try to understand more about what happens there. So I'm feeling really, really good about that. Let me
ask a question. Are there any tea leaves out there that could be read a little bit more succinctly, or is there any indications that this looks like it's going in the right direction? Is anyone tipping any hand on any of this?
Nothing I can report on publicly.
Do they have any kind of a deadline or a timeline that they're looking at?
No, and I've talked to Greg Bidet several times, and he just can't say, because he doesn't. They're concerned. There's always this possibility that funding gets yanked, or, you know, anything can happen. So they just don't, they won't say. I will just say somebody inadvertently mentioned something when we were evaluating some legal agreements, and it implied that a decision was forthcoming. But at the same time, you don't know if they actually know this or they were just assuming. So that's why I say I just can't, it's hard to say. But I think the tea leaves that I'm reading look pretty good.
I agree with April's symbol just a moment ago, like the double cross your fingers. So she had the one. I'm like, okay, double cross our fingers. So
I'm also superstitious, and I hate to even, you know, admit any of that. So,
well, I was so confident last year, 2 years ago, whenever it was, that we were going to be awarded, that it kind of dampened my morale there a little while. But this one even feels better, Ron. I agree with you. A quick question, though. Have we given any consideration to the time and cost of what we might now have to pay? I don't know if costs have gone up, gone down. We feel like we have enough in the budget to do what we thought we were going to do initially, or will we find that we have a shortfall now, or do we know?
You know, we don't know, because everything we did was based on a cost per square foot. And there was no rocket science behind the cost per square foot. There's been no design work done other than the help that we got from growth management. And those are all just ballpark numbers. So basically what's going to happen is we're going to have to design within that budget. That's what it's going to come down to. Now, there is a little bit of a contingency included in the budget. But beyond that, it's just, you know, how do you stay within that budget and what you construct? So, I mean, there were some. Go ahead.
I would suggest that once you know firmly if it's a go, to jump on that quickly before any price escalation can occur. I think probably with the economic conditions, there's not the same upward labor cost pressure. I don't know about materials, but I think it might be not any worse than it was a while ago, and timing might be okay if we get word soon.
And part of the conversation that we're having with Kim's team is on the facility side, is on the construction side, and how to prepare the best we can for that as well. So we're doing, you know, without going nuts, you know, before it's awarded, we're trying to do at least as much as we can to plan and prepare, you know, for the next steps. Mm-hmm. And that includes on the construction side. And yes, absolutely. But also recognizing that as what Kim has pointed out, is that there are some constraints with working with the EDA in terms of their process and trying to get everything approved. So we're doing what we can.
To give you all insight, so it's been a year since we were awarded the EDA funds. We just probably 2 or 3 weeks ago got the approval from the EDA manager for the to put the bid out for the construction manager. I'm just saying. So I told him, I said, I'd prefer you meet with the group to kind of put you in reality of how it really works once the award happens.
Yeah. And that was that's a $2.5 million project, right? Something like that. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all flows. So, but I'll keep you updated as I learn more.
And is there a disbursement based on certain benchmarks happening in terms of how buildings constructed or this or that or whatever?
It's on a reimbursement basis. So as we expend funds, we submit for reimbursement.
Okay.
So, yeah. And I will tell you, I do know that there's we have 30 days from the award to submit all of the award documents. So that first 30 days will be kind of busy just trying to get through all the paperwork. So, which was one of the documents we had to return to them to include in the award agreement, was our acknowledgement of that information. So any other questions about that? Okay.
It would really feel like we're on a short list, Ron. I agree.
I think so. I want to mention that Naomi and I met with OEV. We had really, really good conversation about how we can work together in the future in terms of marketing the park, what their process is. We've still got a lot of ways to go. I think they're working through their own budget issues now. We'll see where that goes. But probably the couple things that came out of that meeting that were really important is, one, that we're going to continue to meet on a monthly basis so that we can funnel as much information about what's going on at the park to them as possible. That's the thing they said is most important, is that they know all that's going on. They can share that information with their lead generating company, ROI. And then we will also provide information. Naomi's got this on her task list, which is to once a month before their newsletter goes out, to make sure that we get all information we can to them to get it in their newsletter. So we'll get a little broader push from them on that. But again, it's still kind of early with them. They've got some new team members we've met with before, but I don't know that they have been beyond their normal push for the Magnetics Task Force. I don't know that they've been thinking holistically about Innovation Park. So I'm hopeful that we can get their whole team involved in understanding what's going on with Innovation Park and can convey that in their search process. And then the other thing I'm trying to get out of them is, what do they actually need for us to be doing? So tying that in, as Christina mentioned in the in her presentation to the board, how do we get the pad ready sites? What do we need to have for them? And then also, what kind of office space should we be thinking about preparing for them? And if there's anything we can do in advance to make sure that's ready to go, we'll do that. But as we're finding out, we've got a lot of these, you know, balls in the air. So I'm not sure how much we're going to be able to do right now, but to the extent that we can have a better understanding of what market demand is, we can prepare for that going forward. And finally, just so you know, I haven't forgotten about it. I'm still working on the 501c3 application. It seems like every time I get ready to work on that, it just takes so much time to get your head around all of that. And every time I start to get into it, something weird happens, like an email account gets hacked or, you know, things like that. It just diverts your attention to other things. We had a little challenge with that. And we're, just so you know, if you receive the email, we've taken care of that. We now have put some additional security processes in place, and hopefully we'll we'll get a stop to that. We've done so well that it's now hard for us to get into our own stuff. So that's the trade-off with some of those security features, is it's hard for everybody to get in. So we'll see how that goes. And that's all I have for now. If anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Ron. I appreciate that report. Lots of good stuff going on. So, Michael, your report, sir.
Yes, thank you. So it's been interesting. Since March 1st, we have 4 or 5 new virtual members. So the total is 5 or 6, depending on how you count them. So that's kind of interesting, because between January 1 and March 1st, we had 1. So the COVID thing, if you want to look at anything positive, has folks realize that they can still do business virtually, including joining an incubator program where I can provide some value-added services to them, which has been working out pretty well. So that's that was an interesting little factoid. August 5th, I'll be completing the DOMI grant that we received to do a module on SBIRs. I'm going to do the new NSF project pitch for them, and that's, again, August 5th. Then August 11th, I will do the second cohort of the OEV grant SBIR program. So those will still be moving along despite our limitations by being online, but it worked out fairly well for cohort 1, and I didn't see any complaints in the survey at all. In fact, it was pretty positive. And then also September 16th is a FAMU SBIR program for the REACH grant with them. So all the grant SBIR programs are moving forward as planned with no interruptions due to the COVID. Interestingly enough, out of cohort 1 and then some recommendations for other entrepreneurs from community leaders, we got 8 for 8 NSF project pitches approved. We were 7 for 8. 1 got rejected with conditions. The conditions were met, and now 8 for 8 on NSF project pitches. Doing a number of SBIR reviews as well, reviewing some partnership agreements with a couple of folks in the community, Kitchy Wearables with DiviUp, and also one of our members, EduClear, with Advanced Design Group out of Texas. So they're entering partnerships. Also doing funding assistance for members, New Energy, Blue Quench, Advanced Medical Instruments, NeuroJungle, and something called Idiom Publishing. And I'm working on the TEEP build out. Hopefully in the spring we'll launch that. We're, as you know, transitioning that from a generic entrepreneurship, which others are doing in the community, to technology entrepreneurship, focusing a lot on prototyping and the manufacturing tolerances and a number of other things. I've got the outline done, working on building out the program. And then lastly, you know, the Knight Foundation provided us a nice grant to provide lab equipment. I've been refining the list, and there's a couple of groups that are offering lab startup assistance at reduced rates, and I'm looking into those as well as some online auction sites for used equipment, and they are legitimate, qualified online sites. So those are all the things that I'm doing during this time. Never a dull moment.
Thank you. Lots of good information coming from you. Michael, a couple of quick questions. How many did we have in our first cohort for the SBIR?
I'm sorry, say it again, Kim.
How many students did we have in our first cohort for the SBIR?
We had 13 that signed up, 10 that finished the class. Some of the others moved into the new cohort. 2 of them moved into the new cohort because they couldn't complete the classes. So we did have 1 drop. 13 total, 10 finished. Our obligation was 10 with OEV.
Very good. And then the last question related to the lab equipment. I know that that's a great idea with the Knight Foundation. How would that work while, you know, in the remote environment? What's going to be our game plan or strategy for that?
Yeah, so we've held off on putting anything in there now. Obviously, we're not there to facilitate the installation. A couple of the groups that I've been dealing with, one of them has a whole startup guide that I've been reviewing, they actually come in and set it up for you and calibrate all the equipment. And then they, some of it, a lot of it is easy enough that they can teach me how to do it. So, but we are going to wait because there's no point in having $35,000 worth of equipment show up when no one's there to receive it. Or if you are there to receive it, to do everything necessary to set it up properly.
Thank you.
Well, and then on hold. If I could add to that, then the other big part of that is, and we had this with another piece of equipment we were looking at, is it's kind of a chicken and egg thing. Do you want to put a bunch of equipment in there when you don't have anybody to put in there? Yes, it will be great to have when we're trying to attract people, but we don't have a big demand for people even wanting to look at space right now. So it's not a matter as much of not having someone there to receive it, because if we needed to receive it, we need to get it set up, we can still do that. That's not a big problem. But it's is there a demand for the use of it? And I don't want to put stuff in there and just have it sitting and aging and, you know, collecting dust until we're ready to get back to actively putting people into that space. So
is that grant funded or is that to be funded?
That was a grant from the Knight Foundation.
Yeah, and have they funded it? Do we have the cash on hand or?
Yes.
Okay.
Michael, I've got a question about your SBIR program. Have you done it long enough to see that any outfits have applied for grants, and what's the success rate?
So we've got probably 9 applications out there, Eric, and it takes anywhere between 6 and 18 months to get a response, and it's too early to say. So none of them have gotten a rejection, I can say that. So probably the longest outstanding one was with NeuroJungle. And that's kind of a surprise to me because it's still outstanding. But with COVID, everything from NIH moved to supporting COVID-related stuff. So I think he's been put on hold with his stroke victim apparatus that he developed.
Okay.
But no rejections, so I'm happy about that.
No news is good news. So thank you for your report, Michael, as well, and the work that you have underway. And Naomi, if you would share with us what you have going on.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. So I've been working on a brand new affiliate program for park employees, which will be a nice little benefit for them. I'm calling it Park Perks. So this will be Innovation Park partnering with local businesses to provide discounts to Innovation Park staff at their establishments. So I've had 4 or 5 businesses that are interested so far, and I'm hoping that we can launch in a month or so. And I'm hoping to have at least 10 by the time we launch, and then continually add new businesses as they, as I reach out to them, the discounts can change. So for example, one of them is like Red Eye Coffee. They're going to give 5% discount to staff. So just a fun little benefit for employees in the park. So working on that. Tech grants, that we are pivoting to be virtual. So we're still trying to figure out how exactly that's going to look. But marketing for that is going to start in August with a press release and all that, and then kind of dig into the planning a little bit more and try to hammer down what that's going to look like virtual and how that's going to work. Tech topics we've got coming up on Wednesday, July 29th. That's our first virtual. We've got 16 people registered so far, and I've got 2 e-blasts to be sent before then. So I'm hoping we can get at least 20 signed up before the event. So that's what I'm hoping to see, if not more than 20, but I'm hoping at least 20 will register. I had one person said that he was interested, but he couldn't come at the time. So he's going to watch later. So maybe there's some of that happening too.
And we certainly invite all of you to participate and all the board members to listen in. We'll be using Zoom as well and live streaming on top of that. So however you can pay attention. And you want to tell them more about who's going to be speaking and
Yeah, we've got Rebecca Sweat and Tariq Dickens from the FAMU FSU College of Engineering, and they're going to be talking about their research in like 3D sensors and digital interfaces and how it can be applied to, I think it's like in-space manufacturing and airplanes and damage detection and things like that. So it sounds pretty cool. So that should be, I'm looking forward to hearing what they have to say. And then lastly, Ron kind of talked about the OEV partnership, but I had, I scheduled a separate meeting with their marketing coordinator and kind of introduced myself and touched base with her. And she's going to start doing an Innovation Park Corner in their newsletter. So I'm going to send them stuff monthly and kind of reach out to her on a regular basis and kind of keep Innovation Park fresh in her mind. And we'll have that corner in their newsletter that'll be Innovation Park focused. And I'm also sending her like important social media posts of ours so they can, she can share them on their, on OEV's social channels. So I'm excited about that. I think that is really great. And I'm glad that I got a chance to talk to her and kind of, you know, work with her. So yeah, that's it for me. If you have any questions, let me know.
Tammy, it sounds like you have gotten your feet wet in this virtual environment. Again, very glad to have you on board, and thanks for the initiative with the OEV component, because I think that's critical to not only expanding and getting the word out about what we're doing, but also just the overall collaboration. Are there other comments related to Naomi's report? Okay, hearing none, then we will move to any new business that's out there. Ron, is there any new business or others that would want to bring something forward? Okay, recognizing that there is none, then we will take a motion to adjourn. Is there a motion for it?
So moved.
All right.
Second.
I'll make that second. There we go. We'll make that second. So thank you all for your